On today's show, biggest headlines of the college football season. We pick conference champions of the Power Four leagues, and Tennessee makes a sponsorship deal.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Tell the overwhelmed bartender at midnight, can you get it a spec?
Russ Dellinger.
No, I side with the ice cream folks.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Let's see if they can last minute NIL in a transfer from somewhere.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and week zero is 1 week away. That is a classic college football sentence right there. So, just an alert to our listeners. Saturday, you know, week zero is week zero, so we're not going to overdo things, but this is a good antiquing weekend. Let's go visit your parents weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's get together for coffee with your college friend weekend.
Let's go to Austin for a bachelor party weekend.
Hell yeah, Ross.
We'll see if a 108-year-old conference doesn't dissolve this year while I'm at a bachelor party in Austin.
Be careful.
Yeah.
Conferences have been known to get got when Ross is down there in Austin having a good time.
Yeah,
that's right.
Last weekend without football, Dan, I think I saw somebody put this out yesterday, until the last weekend in January.
Yeah.
College, yeah. Then you still get the NFL after that. So our long national nightmare is over. Football is returning. Now, week zero, if you haven't brushed up on the sked, we got Florida State, Georgia Tech in Dublin. That's kicking it off at noon. Next year, isn't it? Who is it next year? LSU versus somebody? LSU's going next year. I think Florida State fan will do very well with the Dublin pubs.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Georgia Tech will step it up. Step it up. We'll see. Then we get the excitement of a national televised game as the only game going at 4. Montana State, New Mexico. FS1. Remember last, it was New Mexico State, UMass had the it was the only game, so it's like 5 million people watch the game,
all of a sudden we all decided Diego Pavia was like the greatest player. The UMass quarterback
UMass won that, and New Mexico State Diego became a legend for peeing on the New Mexico logo and then beating them in the game.
That's right.
All-time Las Cruces. It's the double dip. It's like winning two Heismans.
We'll never have to buy another drink again in the town.
No, and they know what they're doing down there. 8 o'clock, SMU, Nevada. SMU, Pat's predicted they're going to make a run to the playoff.
Right.
Surprise team.
27.5-point favorites over Nevada. And then for all you late night partiers, Delaware State at Hawaii, midnight Eastern.
Degenerative gambler game.
Yeah. I don't know which is a more sad and desperate sort of degenerate gambler game, that one or the 4 o'clock with Montana State and New Mexico.
I don't think this is close. First off, Montana State's quality FCS. And this game is on something called, what is it? Stet?
What?
It's on Spec.
Who?
I don't know.
Is that like Spectrum TV? Is this just like a cable thing?
My gas station TV joke is getting closer.
It is.
Spec. I mean, FS1, like, okay. We know what that is. Spec?
Yeah. No.
Yeah, you're going to have to work. You're not going to get the bar to change the channel.
No.
You tell the overwhelmed bartender at midnight, can you get it a spec? Could you change that?
Need
TV?
To see a little Hawaii against Delaware State.
No, that's always fun. No.
The way,
spec 2 plus. I'm sorry.
Remember that was Fox Sports Southwest Plus or whatever.
Yeah, we wanted to pay extra to get all your Southwest extra rodeo and rattlesnake roundup coverage this week.
By the way,
rattlesnake
Ross Diego Pavia may never be able to or have to buy a drink again in Las Cruces, but he's no longer in Las Cruces. He transferred to Vandy and might be the starting quarterback.
Of course he did. Of course. I can't keep up where all the players are. I've got my Phil Steele like Pat does over there, and I'm reading the Phil Steele, and I'm like, oh, he plays there now?
Yep.
Dude's about to get a grad degree from Vanderbilt because he peed on the logo in New Mexico. How American
doing
fortunes
well
are made. That's the American dream. Kick that door in. Pull yourself up by the bootstraps. Anyway, that's coming. So this is the last week. So we've been waiting and waiting. It's almost like it's never going to come. So I thought we would just, do a little bit of just a basic preview of the season. Very basic stuff, and kind of get there. I wanted to do what the biggest, just start with each one of us giving our biggest college football headline of the 2024 season. What is it? Here we are. We're on the cusp. Week zero is coming. You stare into this glorious abyss. What is it that you're most excited about? Pat Forty, what is the biggest? Maybe not excited, but what's the biggest?
Thank you for giving me the first overall pick in this, because it's fairly obvious. It's like when Trevor Lawrence was getting drafted. I mean, there's only one person you're taking first.
There was a fairly obvious choice a couple weeks ago when we did a draft, and you chose Michigan USC as the biggest game of the season.
Most interesting non-conference game was the way that was billed.
There is an obvious choice here, Dan, and I wonder if he's about to make it or not make it.
Yeah, I'm on the edge of my seat here.
Come on. Let's go, Pat.
This is like when Diego unzips his pants. I don't know what's going to happen. Anything could go down.
Oh, my God.
Surprise me.
There's this little 12-team playoff thing.
He did pick the number one rated prospect.
That was tough. You know, we're going to have the greatest postseason in college football history by far. And I think it's going to lead to the most interesting regular season we've had. Yes, we lose a couple of things in it. One being, the absolute gravity of every loss. Because teams are going to have multiple losses and get into the playoff. But I think that there's just going to be so much gained in terms of wider audience of anticipation and optimism and hope that you're getting in the playoff, and then the playoff games themselves. And I think all the jockeying for positions, and as we kind of figure out, what it's looking like, and like, oh my gosh, we may have Mississippi playing in South Bend in December, or we may have, Penn State going to Tallahassee in December or something. I just think that the anticipation for this is going to be huge, and then I expect it to deliver as well. I think it's going to be fantastic. So to me, that's, you take the open layup when it is offered. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I think it's because of the playoff and because of this other thing, which is my pick, it feels like the most anticipated college football season ever or in our recent history. And the other thing is the outcome of realignment and the new leagues that we have, the new makeup in the huge matchups. It felt like, guys, three, maybe four weekends every year throughout the season, there were like kind of dud weekends where you only had, maybe you had a one or two top 25 matchups, but maybe you didn't have any top 10 or any top 15. That's probably not going to be the case this year because of realignment in the new conferences. You just have bigger matchups, and it seems like every weekend there are two or four or six big brands colliding that are ranked in the top 10, top 20 of the country. Just Ohio State visits Oregon, right? Things we're not used to of conference games have become conference, will be conference games. Oklahoma, LSU, Michigan, USC. I'm excited about those sort of matchups. And the other things about realignment too, which is like, you know, Arizona, you know, in the Big 12, Utah in the Big 12 and in those matchups as well. But the Big 10 and SECs, oh, and I can't forget Cal, Stanford and SMU, right? SMU hosts Florida State in like 3 or 4 weeks, I believe. So I'm excited about these new kind of matchups that we're not used to seeing as often that are now conference games.
I think this will carry over to next year when UMass joins the MAC.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, a MAC yeah. Bowling Green game. Can't wait.
And Ross brings up an excellent truth because people, you know, look, we all get excited for college football and we always remember the, you know, the exciting moments overwhelm some of the others. And part of college, the greatness of college football is sitting around watching New Mexico and Montana State. And it actually could be a thrilling game, but like it never knowing where it's coming from. But then you got to kind of put in the work. You got to put in the work a little bit, and then you get some Red River craziness or something like that. But as people would always say, every single week is incredible. I'm like, try hosting a college football podcast because there are some weeks where you're going into that thing going. Now, it usually something will happen because we just have so many teams, but. It's race for the case time, and we're like, there's a big Missouri-Indiana clash rematch of the Music City Bowl 2 years ago. That's game three. Conference realignment has huge negatives, and not having the Pac-12 and some of this stuff is just it's just not fun. It's not what you want, and we could have accomplished what we have accomplished through a scheduling alliance. At one point, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten had set up a scheduling deal where they would play, basically everyone would play each other once a year, and you could have set that up properly the way they do like the in basketball. And you'd pretty much get the same thing, and we wouldn't have had to cause all this tumult. But instead, we've destroyed traditions and ruined certain rivalries and given up a great deal. That said, it's made for TV. The TV execs are doing it. It's hard to stomach. You don't, no one's rooting for the TV networks. But most of us consume the games, all of us consume the games via TV more than anything else because you only really go to one game a week at most. Most people go to maybe just their home games, and that's a hardcore fan that goes to every home game. There's a lot of great TV games. I mean, this is really good. I mean, you're looking at these things. What was the one? It was, I know some of the schedules are not as good, but I mean, Michigan is playing Texas, USC, Washington, and Oregon, and then Ohio State. Like, that's five. I mean, you've got, see, Pat, I'm throwing you a bone here. That USC game is pretty cool.
Hey, how about that? Whoa, what do you know?
Now, four of those.
All of a sudden, it's not the worst pick in the history of any
it's
draft.
It's not number one, I'll tell you that.
Jeez Louise.
Michigan's most interesting game is not on September 21st when the Trojans show up. It's November 30th when they go to Columbus. But that's all
right. It's too obvious.
Okay. But, like, that's a hell of a schedule. Like, that's a lot of good games besides all the like Michigan State. So like that's a lot of big games and we're getting that because of this. Now we could have done it a better way. So I agree with Ross. Biggest storyline to me. I'm going to go with this. Those are the two obvious. I think, is there a third obvious I'm missing?
Or not Pat really. I mean, those two kind of dwarf everything yeah. else.
I'm going to go with, are you going to win the title with a quarterback who stayed? Or quarterback you brought in. And I look at the top four, five, it's really throughout these contenders. Georgia, Texas, keeping their guys. Carson Beck, Quinn Ewers, right? Second, third year in the program. These are guys they recruited. Or I guess Quinn Ewers was a transfer, but it was a while ago. Jalen Milroe sitting there at five. Drew Aller is at eight. Michigan's 9. They're going to have, well, who knows who's going to be their starter, but whatever. I don't really see Michigan as necessarily going to win the title. But let's just go with those top ones. Or are you Ohio State, who says we're going to plug in Will Howard from Kansas State and we're going to win it? Or Oregon, we're going to plug in Dillon Gabriel and we're going to win it? How do you build a champion at through that position in this era? I think that's going to be, I don't think we're going to have a definitive answer in 1 year, but I think it's going to be interesting. Can you do this with this kind of plug and play guy?
Absolutely. No, I think it's going to be fascinating with some of those, the two obvious ones you mentioned with Will Howard and Dillon Gabriel in teams that are right now national championship caliber. But then even the next level of, Cam Ward at Miami. I don't have the top.
DJU at Florida State.
DJU, absolutely. Yep. Riley Leonard at Notre Dame.
Yep.
Can you make the playoff with that first year guy plugging him in there? So it's a good one.
Yeah. All right.
Also, yeah, that's a good one.
You got another one? Honorable mention.
Yeah. No, you're a distant third in this.
Yeah. Bronze medal.
And there you go. You're still on the podium.
I podium.
There's a total of three entries.
Yeah, there was only
here,
three of us. Good job.
It would take a disqualification for you.
Pat,
to miss
you've
the
been
podium.
At a horse race where only three horses end up in it. It's always funny. You're like, everyone's around. I'll bet you. They don't take that bet. Yeah. They're not stupid.
That's right.
Three horse race.
Real quick, on Ross's point, though, of like these weeks where you're just, and Dan, you mentioned, amplified on it too, the weeks where there's just not much good going on. You know, if you think historically, like week three has oftentimes been a little bit of a soft spot. You get some good openers and then a couple trickle over to the second weeks. This is your week three this season. You've got number 21 Arizona at number 18 Kansas State on Friday night. You got Alabama at Wisconsin at noon on Saturday. You have Bill O'Brien and this maybe a sneaky good BC team at Missouri. You have Memphis, which some people think could be the best G5 team at Florida State. You got Texas A&M at Florida. You start getting into some SEC games. And I just think every week's going to be like that, where you're going through and you're like, oh, this. And oh, there's that one too. And another one. And I think it's going to be week to week going to be. You're going to have a harder time making yourself say yes to the apple orchard, I think, this year.
Yeah, I'm antiquing. Get it done this week.
Yeah.
Next two weeks.
Now.
We'll grant you, get it over with.
Week zero, you might need to.
Think of all the little scenes in those Cialis commercials and then just pick one of those. Find a couple tubs up on top of a mountain. Biking. And with the big smile that actor has.
Oh, yeah. Where you're biking like a half a mile an hour.
Yeah, with little baskets in front of your
basket,
bike.
Yeah. Ah, look at us go.
This is so great. I have a little sweater tied around your neck. I'm like, I got $200 on the Bills game. How's Josh Allen doing? I can't check my phone.
Yep. This is the week where you don't have to worry.
Don't have to worry. Get it done. Can't say leaf rake. It's too early for that one. All right. We'll be back after this message. Let's move to this simple game. We did this on Yahoo Sports. Staff predictions. Conference prediction. Who's going to win it? Let's start in the SEC. It just means more. Ross Dellinger, first pick. We can all pick the same one, by the way. What do you like? SEC, who wins?
It's funny, when we did those staff picks, Dan, I was going back and forth between Texas and Georgia of winning the SEC. And I had Texas, and I deleted it, and I wrote Georgia, and then I deleted it, and I wrote Texas, and back and forth. I don't remember who I finished with. I don't remember
you finished
who
with
I ended
Georgia.
Up picking. Did I?
Georgia,
okay, glad you know my own pick, and I don't. So Georgia, So I ended up with Georgia, but I was struggling. I was going back and forth between Texas and Georgia. because Texas hosts Georgia. You know, they get them in Austin. But yeah, I mean, in the end, I just picked the talent of Georgia and the recent history of Kirby Smart and the Bulldogs getting to Atlanta and winning it, maybe over Texas. Maybe we have a rematch, right, of that game in Austin in I think it's mid or early October.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going with Georgia as well. Just I think an extremely solid, well built roster that you look at, and I just don't see much of any flaws or serious problems. They could have one of the, you know, the top probably five players at a nationally at a position at almost every position. You know, I don't know whether they have just absolute, you know, Heisman Trophy level talent other than Carson Beck, but I don't think it matters when you've got, you put 22 guys on the field that are all extremely good. The caveat there, their SEC road schedule is tough. You're at Kentucky, which they should win. They've beaten Kentucky every year since 2010. I mean, they've beaten them for a long time in a row. But I don't think that's going to be an easy game. Then you turn around, you're at Alabama, and we know the history there. Now, maybe the you take the Saban factor out and Georgia does not freak out and melt down. But we'll see. They got to show it first. At Texas, as Ross mentioned, and at Mississippi coming off of the cocktail party. So that is four tough road games right there, really tough. And if they get past Mississippi, then they're at Tennessee. That three-game stretch is fascinating.
Tennessee's in Athens.
Yes, Tennessee's in Athens. Florida, Jacksonville. Tennessee.
Yeah.
Florida, Jacksonville, at Mississippi, home Tennessee. You get past that, obviously you're kind of home free with Massachusetts and Georgia Tech. And as a matter of fact, your SEC schedule's over, so you know whether you're in or out of the championship game. But tough schedule. Need to stay healthy. Need to not drive recklessly.
So I picked Georgia in my little but I'm gonna flip flop. I'm gonna take Texas, and this is why, because of the schedule. Georgia is at Bama, at Texas, at Ole Miss, Tennessee at home. I'll take where Texas has got OU neutral, Georgia at home, at A&M. Those are how I'd look at the really hard games. That's just a better schedule for Texas. I am risking my favorite Boomer Sooner fan. Who I'm literally in Paris covering the Olympics. My phone rings. I answer it. When is Steve Sarkisian ever develop the player? Their wide receivers aren't it. I mean, yeah, you know, just because 2 weeks ago I said something nice about him. Looking forward to the call. I know I said something good about the Horns. Hook them. I'm a little busy here.
This is a friend of yours or just a random dude who got your number?
I don't know. And sometimes I don't know. Oh, it's a friend. He's just a little passionate. Yeah. It's okay. Yeah. It's just like, dude, I'm like waiting to talk to Simone Biles. I don't have time for this. I don't know what yes, their wide receiver depth. I know they brought some guys in. Anyway, that's what I'm going with. Big Ten.
Tell you what.
What?
Texas got two major running back injuries already.
Yeah. Well, both the top two running backs out, starter and backup. Yeah.
Oh, I'm already regretting my
first
pick.
Couple weeks of camp.
They got guys that can run the ball.
See if they can last minute NIL in a transfer.
Yes.
Don't worry about it. Big Ten. Pat, who's winning?
I'm going with Ohio State. Shocker there, I know. $20 million roster, allegedly, supposedly. And, you know, retained maybe eight guys who could have been drafted in the first half at least, maybe higher, of the NFL draft. Brought in Caleb Downs, who I think is the single best transfer in college football. Also brought in Quinshon Judkins from Ole Miss. Also brought in Will Howard, as we discussed, at quarterback there. And I'm not sure Will Howard has to be great with the running backs and with the receivers that they have. Offensive line's got to step up a bit. They were pretty good last year. They weren't dominant and overpowering. They, you know, if your quarterback, and Will Howard may well be significantly better than Kyle McCord. But even if he isn't, I do think they've got so much talent otherwise, and that defense should be lights out, that I think Ohio State if they don't win it this year, as we all know, we'll just look for signs of smoke rising from Columbus.
Yeah, same. But I was going back and forth on this one too. It's kind of going back and forth between Oregon and Ohio State in a similar situation with Texas and Georgia. Ohio State plays at Oregon, I think midway through the year, October 12th. And so that had me thinking, maybe I should pick the Ducks. But in the end, went with, just like I did with Georgia, went with the team that most recently has had a lot of success and obviously has a lot of talent. I agree with Pat. You know, they had probably the best transfer portal haul Ohio State did of anybody, except maybe an Ole Miss or something like that. It was impressive, some of the folks they landed. The big question's going to be at quarterback, right? And if Will Howard, Kansas State guy, can get the ball to the right people at the right time. He doesn't need to do a ton, right? He's got incredible weapons, so just distribute the ball, be patient, don't turn the ball over. And you would think the Buckeyes could roll. But the schedule is not simple, not just at Oregon, but also at Penn State, and then finishes with Michigan.
You got a visit from Iowa there. I'm going to Ohio State as well. I just think they're in tremendous position to be really, really good. I don't think the roster stacked. They've got everybody back. Like I said, Caleb Downs, just they were able to plug in guys in those spots. They remind me a great deal of Michigan last year. And I say that in a good way, Buckeye fans. Only the Buckeye fan could take that as an insult. But I just think that roster is so solid. And my thing with Oregon, neither guy's schedule is that difficult. Oregon gets Ohio State visits there, and they go to Michigan. But this is the part I'm really interested in, to almost to that conference realignment part that Ross was talking about. They got this stretch Saturday, December 28th, we'll just start on the 12th. They go to UCLA, which is not a close trip. Then Jonathan Smith brings back the Michigan State in like a trap game.
Yep.
Oregon State coach. Ask anyone around Michigan State, how's the team going to be? No idea.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, we got a whole bunch of new guys. We got a new coach. Like, I will not, let's see. Like, I'm not sitting there going, oh, 3-9 for the Spartans. They could get good. And they had some talent. How much stayed and all that. Like, but this is a good program. So we'll see. But that's a trap game, because the following week, here come the Buckeyes. Then this is where it's going to be interesting in how this West Coast flank works. So they are in Autzen in Eugene. Then they go 5 days later, they're in West Lafayette. Bang the drum. Coming off that big one, 5 days later, you're in, that's not the, direct flights. No. I know you charter, but you can't. Can you land a football plane at West? You probably can, I guess, but hello. Week later, back home, Illinois. Week later, at Michigan. Week later, back home, Maryland. Week later, at Wisconsin. How do the team, a college team, college kids hold, that is, NFL does not have a situation like that. And these kids still, like, they go to school or at least log into something. I mean, like, they're not going back to their 14,000 square foot mansions with their private, like, how are you handling that? Like, you need your sleep? Well, you know, let me tell you what. You beat the Buckeyes on the 12th. May not be a whole lot of sleep that night. So how do you withstand that? That's what that would hold me back on Oregon.
I think that's going to be a fascinating dynamic to watch for them and all the West Coast teams that are doing this extended travel. Can you hold up doing it multiple times in a period of, you know, a month or 2 months or whatever? So, fascinating dynamic. And as you said, like, in the NFL, it's not easy in the NFL to travel three time zones, but you're not coming back and attempting to be a student. You may have to attempt to be a father, And stuff like that, but you're still, you're not having to report to a classroom, theoretically, and sit there and pay attention, theoretically, and, you know, perform academic duties. So it is a lot. It is asking a lot, for sure.
They don't go to class now. They have the online class.
Online.
Yeah. Still. It's all online. Yeah. Unless you're at, like, I don't know, Duke, like that, maybe.
Well,
but anyway.
Stanford, well, Cal, UCLA, USC, pretty good academic institutions.
Yeah, that's good. I know Stanford probably is up there where you probably don't. I was on the phone with an administrator the other day, and he's like, you know, our kids can't do online classes. It's like not allowed. And I just, for the life of me, cannot remember where this was, but it was one of those schools, and that makes it
a school like UMass. I think that's what's holding us back.
I'm sure that was it.
It's about the academic integrity of the degree.
Yes. I was doing some research on this, in a similar way to what Pat's talking about USC or Oregon. USC has something similar from September 21st to October 19th. So less than a month, they go to Michigan, Minnesota, and Maryland. One completely cross country flight, two that are pretty close. It's a total of 6,700 miles. And that's just brutal.
USC has spent a lot of time on this because every other year in the middle of their conference season, they go to Notre Dame. And I know I've heard it from Coach O, from Lane Kiffin. I've never talked about it with Lincoln Riley. I never heard him address it, but like, they have a whole plan to get through this because it's so unusual to go three time zones in the middle. And how do you adjust to that? These guys are doing this now every other week, not every other year once. And do you, like, all right, you're fired up. You're going, can you stay fired up if you're going to Minnesota or something that's not as exciting as, like,
yeah, Notre Dame. It's USC. Right. Notre Dame's a rivalry game and a storied traditional atmosphere, but.
Yeah. Let's say they beat Ohio State on Saturday, Friday in West Lafayette. Like, what, Purdue at night? Like, that's a great scene.
Yeah.
You know, is trap. So there's a lot of them. All right. ACC. Let's pick it before it dissolves. Get your picks.
Come
in.
On, Dan.
Billable hours will win the ACC this year.
Always.
Yeah. Mediation. Mediation. I pick mediation to win.
There you go. Mediation.
Conference champion.
Ross, go ahead. ACC.
Dan, do you remember who I picked?
You picked Clemson.
I picked Clemson to make a resurgence with in year two of Garrett Riley's offense and Cade Klubnik at quarterback. Dabo's got the boys. William Christopher, as Dan likes to say. I think he's got the boys coming back, and I think they I think they make a return. I'm banking on, obviously, an improvement at the quarterback position and the offense in general and moving the ball a little better. So I'm thinking that they'll have things right, and Dabo will be proved right once again. We'll see. They do have a trip, I believe, to Florida State, don't they? I think they go to Tallahassee. I want to say, I haven't memorized all the schedules, but yes, October 5th at Florida State. And they do go to at Virginia Tech as well. So with that Florida State game, October 5th, pretty big one.
They get NC State as well. I think they're going to be, they're at Pitt. Yeah. All right. Pat.
My picks have been chalky so far, so I'm going completely out of the solar system here, and Joe, our producer, is free to clip this to make me look like the biggest idiot on earth come December. SMU, gonna walk into the ACC and win the sucker. I love the schedule. I love the coach, Rhett Lashley. Let's start there. I love the fact that they have a third-year offensive coordinator and a third-year defensive coordinator with Rhett Lashley, so you've got your brain trust that's been together now. He got quarterback Preston Stone, who stayed there, probably had opportunities to go to a lot of places, but why not? They're a Power 4 program now. He had a great season last year. I expect him to do the same this year. Their defense really improved last year. They only gave up 18 points a game, and they've got most of their top guys back on that side of the ball. And the schedule. I like the schedule. They got Florida State in Dallas. When Florida State is coming off a big game the week before. Let me see what it is. I remember noting that. Well, no, they're not. They're Florida State's coming off Cal. That's not a big game. But still, you get Florida State to come to Dallas. It's going to be the biggest home game at SMU in who knows how long. Maybe four
history,
decades.
Maybe. Yeah, ever.
Maybe. You don't play Clemson. You don't play Virginia Tech. Your other road trips. Now, you got a kind of a squirrely one to open the season at Nevada. Nevada's been terrible, but don't just, you know, like walk in there at Reno saying, ah, we got it. But then after Florida State, you win that guy. If you win that game, you're at Louisville, at Stanford, at Duke, at Virginia. Louisville could be a tough game there for sure. But I don't think at Stanford, at Duke, and at Virginia are mission impossible. If they get past Florida State and they're 5-0, and it's a big if, obviously. But if they're 5-0 after that, start dreaming big, Pony Express.
Value pick. I'm looking online. Yeah. SMU is plus 1,000 or plus 1,200 everywhere I'm seeing.
Make the bet,
really?
Pat.
To win the ACC? Or?
To win the ACC. Looks like the Florida State's about plus 300, 250. Obviously, it's like 10 sports books I'm here looking. Clemson's in the 300s. Miami's in the 400s. NC State is in the 600s. And then you get to SMU and Va Tech in about 1,000. And really, for most places, Louisville is ahead of both of those.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying what you should do with your money other than buy copies of Epic Athletes for the local young reader in your life. We have Simone Biles. We have Steph Curry, a lot of Olympic heroes. But if you want to do something else with your money, you know, Pat is speaking. Pat is spoken.
There you go.
I'm taking the U, and I know we just went through this and no one picked Florida State. Oh, we're dead. FSU Twitter finds out about this. I'm almost willing to pick FSU just to avoid the arsenal of hate that came in. Look it. What do you want us to do? No
of
respect.
Of course, a bunch of know-nothing idiots like you would pick
I thought you should
Noles.
Have been in the playoff. I mean, what, I had that going for me. Now I hate you. I think this is a daring pick. I am aware who the coach is. But Cam Ward is really good. And they got a ton of talent. What?
He's going to do it, Pat.
Miami Hurricanes are going to win this.
They're
going to win the ACC. And I'll tell you why. This is their ACC schedule. A lot of home, baby. Va Tech, home. And you walk into Miami Gardens. I mean, that is quite an environment. They're at Louisville, FSU, home, Duke, home, at Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, home, at Syracuse. That's the schedule. That's not bad. They avoid Clemson. It's a terrific schedule, and it is a loaded roster, and they have invested significantly. And if Mario Cristobal, I'm not saying he has to win the ACC, but he better come close. He better come close. So,
yeah.
Big
That's
first game.
That's a guy
game.
Who needs a good
big
year.
Big first game.
Big first game up at Florida, but that will not impact the ACC standing. So.
No, it will not. It would impact the temperature of the Miami fan base in some way.
It will.
It's, you know, I was just thinking, like, if by some miracle chance SMU happens to win, could you imagine a top four seeded SMU that a year ago was playing in the American Athletic Conference championship game and hoping to get the last BCS bowl or group of whatever bowl six spot. I mean, it would be unbelievable.
Paul, what in the damn nation is going on with this playoff? How the tide behind SMU? It could happen. Fun. It could happen. All right. The drunken, wild, and woolly in our favorite Big 12. Backyard brawls. Big backyard.
Yeah. Big backyard.
Is it Pat's turn? Yes, it's Pat's turn. Yes. Go ahead. Pick a team, any team.
Honestly. Give me one of the top, say, five, but I'll take Utah. Total believer in Kyle Whittingham in terms of putting out a really solid team. year in and year out. And Cam Rising, who, you know, didn't play last year, but is a, just a very good quarterback, a great leader. He's like Stetson Bennett's age now. He's like 25 or whatever. Been around since the earth cooled. I love the having him there. And their defense, you know, is going to be good because it's a Utah, Kyle Whittingham, Morgan Scalley defense. The, you know, the competition, K-State, Oklahoma State, Arizona, Kansas, Iowa State, maybe even. Who knows? It's going to be an absolute week-to-week brawl. Their schedule is super interesting pretty early on. You got at Oklahoma State September 21st, then you host Arizona September 28th. We might have a real good read on where that race is going by then. They also have Baylor September 7th, so they will have played three league games in the first five and probably given us a good window into what the heck that league's going to be about and what Utah's going to be about, but I think Utah's going to be about winning.
Dan,
need a refresher?
No, I remember who I picked eventually. But I think at first I wrote in Arizona and then changed it to Utah and then changed it finally to Oklahoma State. So that was my final, my final selection was the Cowboys to win the Big 12. But like Pat mentioned, I mean, you could kind of take any of the top four to five, maybe even down the line to six to like a Kansas that could win that league, and that's why I think it is going to be week to week the most parity and most fun that we'll see. But yeah, I got the Cowboys. They return all but like a couple of starters from the team. I think maybe they lead the nation or are really close in returning players. I trust Mike Gundy, who's now 52, 53, something like that. And despite his what he said at Big 12 Media Day about drinking beers and driving, I think that. But God, is he that old? Wow.
He just looks good. He's just good.
Yeah, well, I remember the days when he was 40.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
He's a man. He's 40. That was 17 years ago. That's crazy. Time flies when you're having
like
fun.
Day over 54.
Wow.
I would quantify or qualify the he looks good with he's got to stop with the two-tone beard and jet black hair.
Two-tone beard with the mullet? That is bringing sexy back, man.
No,
come
man,
on.
No.
Don't ever question what Gundy's up to.
Now they do.
Looks-wise, at least.
This one of the things that helps him in the schedule, they miss Utah on the schedule, and they miss Arizona too. But they do have to go. They have quite a stretch from a 3-week stretch where they go three road games in a four week stretch. At BYU, at Baylor, and at TCU, and they do have to play at the Little Apple, so that could be a toughie. And week two, we'll know a lot about a lot, right? They host Arkansas in week two, but give me the Pokes to win the Big 12.
Yeah, I would extend that list to like Iowa State, UC. I don't know what's going to happen. This is going to be a lot of fun. I am going to take Kansas State. I think they are actually incredibly well-coached team. They continue to get stronger all over their roster. Yes, they lost Will Howard, but there is not a lot of panic in Manhattan over the loss of Will Howard because everyone's excited about Avery Johnson. And you get a returning Pop-Tart Bowl MVP on your team, you should be excited. No, he started a couple games last year. He can run. He can pass. He fits that offense perfectly. So there's a lot of excitement there. And then you get into the schedule in a conference race. Arizona in Manhattan. Oklahoma State in Manhattan. Kansas in Manhattan. They avoid Utah. They're at Iowa State. They're at Houston. They're at BYU. But, this is not killer. At WVU, ride the train, but they're at Colorado, which who knows. But I think Kansas State can do this. I don't think anyone's making it through this league unblemished. And there's just a lot of excitement there. Every man a Wildcat taking the title.
Yeah, I mean, I cannot knock a K-State pick. That's another Kyle Whittingham, Chris Klamen, both can build a solid program. Never count on them to, like, you know, let it fall apart really on their watch. So I do need to make one note here. The Utah-Baylor game counts as a non-conference game because of the schedule they were throwing together early. So for Utah-Baylor, September 7th. Yeah, right. Yeah. I was sitting here looking like, where's Utah's other non-conference game? There's only two. And so I looked it up, and yeah, sure enough, that's a non-con game.
The ACC did that at some point, or still does that maybe, like Wake and like Wake North Forest Carolina North played Carolina. Some, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like yeah. A non-conference game, conference foes. Like, I, what are we doing? But anyway, moving on.
All right, hold it there. We'll be back right after this. This week in money.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tennessee Vols. Tennessee mm-hmm. Volunteers oh, yeah. have inked a sponsorship deal with Pilot Flying J, the truck stops, travel centers, 750 of them around the country. I have frequented, I'd say, 623. Always there for you. Pilot J with Flying mediocre J, coffee,
yeah.
a taquito on a roller. Sometime clean bathrooms. No, Pilot J is actually not bad. That's good. It's a good spot.
We way back in the radio days discussed their coffee. I remember.
Yeah, I think their coffee. It's improved. It's improved dramatically. Okay. Pilot J. Listen, when you're going along on one of those lonely interstates and you see the Pilot J thing, you're pretty confident you're gonna, you know, get something good. Something good's gonna happen in there. So they were sponsoring the Neyland Stadium renovation project. Ross, how much is a 20-year deal? Or is the money not detailed?
No, the money is not detailed. I think that probably Tennessee didn't mind telling what the money is, but releasing it. But I think Pilot would rather keep their financials.
Sounds like NIL. We need guardrails. We need an NIL clearinghouse. How much is
But if you speak to folks in the endorsement brand world, they had originally told me over the summer, like when the NCAA basically lifted the rules to allow schools to do this, put logos on the field and all that stuff on the stadium, even though they don't have naming rights. You know, when you talk to people, it fetched some serious cash in the eight figure. Right, eight-figure world. So I assume we're looking at a deal worth $10+ million a year. And again, that's just an assumption. And in a world of revenue sharing and a $300 million renovation to Neyland, it's very important. That money is certainly very important. And again, we'll continue to see it happen. This was framed to me as a stadium naming rights deal where the name doesn't change. And to me, that doesn't make sense, right? It took a while for me to understand that. Well, how can you call it a naming rights deal if the name stays the same? But it is, to me, you know, yeah, it's a sponsorship deal where the logos will be throughout Neyland Stadium and worth a lot of money. Yeah.
On the field too, right?
On the field, yeah, yeah. On the press box, as they, I think the slogan is Neyland Stadium preserved by Pilot, which I think is a good way to put it.
So, proudly yeah. preserved by Pilot.
Proudly now, preserved.
Pilot's Pilot. Chairman is Jimmy Haslam, who also owns, I think, the Browns, mm-hmm. and he owns a bunch of teams, right?
He's a little bit of a Tennessee. Booster,
yeah, he went to Tennessee.
More than a little bit,
not a little, yeah. Little, yeah.
He's being a major sarcastic, booster, yes, yeah.
Major booster. He owns yes. He has part of the Milwaukee Bucks, the Columbus Crew of MLS, and the Cleveland Browns. He's been a huge, he's a huge Tennessee booster. Listen, I think it's a great deal. It does not bother me one bit that there is a Pilot logo on the. It's not like they took away the checkerboard end zones. Neyland Stadium's one of my favorite places in college football. It's one of the best environments you'll ever go to. I always say Knoxville is, you're looking for a weekend to go to a game. You can do, You can't do much better. I don't know. You can do better than Knoxville because it's like a real city, and the stadium's incredible. You can fly in there and have a fun time. You don't, you're not just like crowded into some college bar where you feel really old, even if you're like 29. I think it's this, if this is it, great. I think great job by Tennessee. You need a rent. You always need to renovate stadiums. And if this cuts the cost on the students or anything else, then even better. Like I 100% in favor of this. I think it's a good deal for Tennessee. And yeah, we're going to see a whole bunch of them. Like we said, places like Tennessee, they're going to get like pilot, like they're going to get big businesses. It's the fun part's going to be not Tennessee. We can tell who's sponsoring right. Some of the lower ones, right?
I think it's a home run the way they've pulled it off. And probably helps that Jimmy Haslam loves Tennessee. So he's not going to say, I need Pilot's name on the stadium. He's going to say, no, we need, that needs to be Neyland Stadium. So keeping that, I think, is fantastic. And then, yes, putting the logo on the field, who cares? If you're adding, if it's $10 million a year, you're halfway to the rev share, baby. I mean, that's a huge leg up on the annual ticket, roughly what it will be to pay your players. So I think it's a great deal. I wish every school had a Jimmy Haslam who would want to kick in that much money in a non-obtrusive, you know, non-like tradition-killing kind of way, but that's not going to happen.
What my question then becomes, obviously, in this new revenue-sharing world that we're about to get into, remember, all outside third-party NIL don't count against the cap. So schools, especially many in the SEC, are trying to figure out ways already, right, how they can maybe circumvent the cap through outside NIL that won't count. And Tennessee is one of those places that has a collective that has done just about as well as any collective, I think, in the country. And you wonder if a brand like Pilot might be involved. You know, and these big brands like Nike with Oregon might be involved in the revenue sharing and allowing a school to expand upon its cap. That is going to be fascinating. Of course, all these deals have to go through a clearinghouse that allegedly is going to have teeth and going to kick out deals that are pay for play. But we'll see.
So will the clearinghouse know how much Pilot paid?
Yeah, yes, they will. They're supposed to. All deals with athletes that are outside the school must go through the clearinghouse before the athlete takes a dime.
I'm intrigued at, because I looked it up. Pilot J is owned by Berkshire Hathaway. So it's not traded, I guess. I guess it's through, like, it's like, what would a public company, would they not make this deal because they don't want this information out? I guess it's gonna be some interesting like side stuff, or maybe it's not that interesting. You know, how just how would this all this play out? I do say this about Pilot, and this is, I think, to Pat's point, Jimmy Haslam understands General Neyland. You don't mess with the name of the stadium. And I'm interested in, I think a business would be very, very dumb to mess with the names of most of these stadiums. You don't change right. Ohio Stadium's name. You do not change Bryant-Denny Stadium.
No.
Nick Saban Field. You do not change, like, these, you know what, you could throw Ben Griffith off the name. No one's going to, everyone calls it the Swamp. Like, you're not changing Notre Dame Stadium. Because if you, let's say you got that deal and you said, boy, this is going to be worth $10 gazillion. Like, every Tennessee fan will be like, I ain't going to Pilot J.
Yeah.
No, like you insulted General Neyland. That's not like the you got to tread cautiously on this. Now, yes. Maybe some places you can get away with it, but other people are just going to be like, no, no, no. On the name of our stadium is the name of our stadium. And especially for a school that's got money. Like, I just think like an Ohio State, an Alabama, a Notre Dame, a Michigan, a USC, like they're, I don't even know if you could, what, you rename the LA Coliseum. Like, I don't even know if it's possible. But,
please don't.
Yeah,
please.
But I don't even think it would work. But right. Like, I think there, you have to tread lightly on how much you are going to, because you leave it up to the marketers, right? They'll slap up, they'll NASCAR.
Oh, yeah, for
but
sure.
But the fans will reject. And if those are the customers you're trying to reach, this isn't working.
Yeah. Like, even to a smaller degree, like a Kinnick Stadium in Iowa. Not mess with Niall Kinnick's name on that stadium. And, you know, there's places where the name resonates and means a lot to the people that have bought the tickets there for 50 years.
Piggybacking off of that a little bit is the on-the-field logos and the fact, you know, schools now can change their midfield logo. And how many schools, we talked about this back in May, I think, but how many schools will really change their midfield logo? Could you imagine LSU taking out the tiger eye in the middle of their field? Texas taking out the longhorn in the middle of their field and replacing it with a corporate logo. There's plenty of places that probably won't do that or even can't do that because of the backlash that they will receive. But I don't know. There's probably quite a bit of places who would. And when you talk to brand folks in the industry, like one used Alabama, which I don't expect Alabama to replace the script A in the midfield. But if they were to, you're also talking about, I think, an eight figure a year check for the midfield logo. Now, we'll see plenty of what Tennessee's doing with Pilot, right, with the logos at the 25-yard line, which probably fetches not as big of a price, but you still preserve a little bit of the tradition there with the midfield, historic midfield logo.
Pro sports, they build new stadiums all the time, right? And so you can rename them, you can rebrand, like even like Staples Center becomes crypto.com, like, okay. But college football is more like baseball, like, at least with some of these, like you can't take the naming rights of Wrigley Field or Fenway or even the new Yankee Stadium. Like, it's Dodger Stadium. Like, they're just iconic. So I don't know. We'll see. All right. Let's wrap with this. Got a lawsuit. Have you heard of the Museum of Ice Cream?
Yes.
It was in Hard Knocks last night, too, or this week, with the Chicago Bears. The Museum of Ice Cream has four locations around the country, and you can go and learn about the history of ice cream. And
you can eat ice cream.
You can eat ice cream. It's for little kids. You say, we're going to go to the museum, and every kid goes, ugh. And they go to the Museum of Ice Cream, and they get excited. Anyway, at the Museum of Ice Cream, they have a thing that's kind of like a ball pit at McDonald's. And it's the sprinkle pit. It's called the sprinkle pool. And the kids can jump in the sprinkle pool is how it is. Well, plaintiff Jeremy Shore filed a lawsuit Wednesday in Manhattan. I think there's two in New York, but there's at least one. And there's one in Chicago. He visited the museum's location in Soho with his daughter on March 31st, 2023. And he suffered severe and permanent personal injuries when he jumped into the sprinkle pool.
Get sprinkles up his nose? Like, what happened here?
Let me read through this. I think he broke an ankle, but maybe not. He says it encourages patrons to jump in the sprinkle pool through its advertising and promotional materials, quote, creating the reasonable but false expectation that the sprinkle pool is fit and safe for that activity. It says ready to jump in. He said jumping in left him with injuries required surgery and may require future surgeries as well as physical therapy and diagnostic testing. He's seeking unspecified damages. I don't know. I don't know exactly what happened to him. Oh, he broke his ankle. I'm sorry. He broke his ankle. Okay. He did.
Yeah.
Justice
in sprinkles?
He got through the sprinkles, I guess, and hit the bottom.
And hit the bottom? Yeah. Oh.
Should you just be able to just, you know, Greg Louganis the dive into the sprinkle pool and expect safety? Who is wrong? Who is in the right here? Customer or the Museum of Ice Cream in Soho?
I stand with the customer here. Like, if you can't trust your sprinkle pool, what can you trust in America? You know, you got to be able to count on the sprinkle pool to be deep enough and cushioned enough that you can jump in whatever your, you know, lard ass weight may be, and you're going to be okay. You're not going to break anything on the bottom. Now, personally, I think I would probably go in, like jump in a sitting formation or even jump in on your back or something, as opposed to like straight feet first.
Yeah.
But Unless there's a sign up there saying, don't go head first and don't go feet first, then go the way you want to go. And if that breaks your ankle, then that's on the Museum of Ice Cream, I will say. I'm siding with the customer here. Sue them for all they got. Get every sprinkles dime worth of sprinkle money.
Settled for a lifetime supply of chocolate chip. Like, what do we
Yes. Yes.
No. Jump to the side. Land differently. What are you doing jumping in the... How deep was this? Did we find out how deep it was, Dan?
There's a picture, and they're like ankle deep in this thing. And then there was one last night on the Chicago Bears are doing ankle hard deep. Knocks, and somebody took their kids to the thing, and that looked a little deeper. It looked more like a ball pit. So I don't know which one is the... I don't know. We need more info on this, but it's not 12 feet deep. That's a lot of sprinkle.
Have a trustworthy sprinkle pit. I mean, what are we doing?
Trustworthy. Ross, you're not making an opinion on this. I side with the
museum, the ice cream folks.
Yeah, me too.
Museum,
First off, come on, man. Have you seen an adult jumping into the ball pit at McDonald's? You'll break your ankle there too. You have to be like, why are you in the ball pit? This is for kids.
There's nothing saying you can't. It's a free country. McDonald's will let an adult go in the ball pit.
They can't discriminate because someone will sue them for that.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. So don't. So make a safe ball pit for big fat people to jump into.
Like you go to the amusement park, and sometimes it's like, this is for kids. You can't be this. You know how you got to be this tall? Other times they're like, you can't be that. Can't have like
this.
Can't have like Victor Wembanyama on the swinging strawberries. Okay, the whole thing would teeter.
I'm going to assume this guy is not 7 foot four.
I don't know. I don't know what this guy is. Also,
a little bit
like,
of an outlier.
I mean, it's the no. Just stay out of the damn ball pit. It's the
I'm dismayed at you all sticking up for big ice cream.
Big ice cream is up.
I mean, it's like a multi-state conglomerate. Brooke and I tried to go to the one in San Francisco like 3 years ago. Sold out. The thing was huge. So.
Well, I mean, Brooke this would be the opinion I'd want. She's an excellent swimmer, obviously, silver medalist. I would like her opinion on the state of the ice cream pool. Museum of Ice Cream Pool. I want to know what Brooke 40 thinks, because that would be an expert opinion.
Okay, I'll get it from her, and I'm
reporting
back for the next show.
We will update this story at a later date.
We had a shallow pool in Paris. We got a shallow sprinkle pool in New York.
Yeah, what was it? There were too many waves in Paris?
Yeah. They built too shallow a pool.
They should have made them swim that river, man.
Oh, people are still coming out of the hospital from that.
It's so funny. Not funny, but... except for them. Well, funny for them, but...
No.
What the hell were you guys thinking? We'd like to have the swimming in the Parisian sewer system. Paris did a lot of good things, but that was not it.
That was a big
people got sick.
Oh hell yeah!
Oh yeah, several of the marathon swimmers got sick.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you followed this thing, Ross. So they've been wanting. They have banned public swimming in the Seine.
Seine.
I lived like two blocks from it for 3 weeks. The Seine, they banned it for the last 100 years. You're not allowed to swim in that river.
100 years.
100 years. But then all of a sudden, coincidentally, on like the third day, the Olympics go, oh, it's okay now. And they had to delay it one day. They're like, not good today.
Yeah,
today,
I did see that. I remember saying
it's not like when they sometimes close a beach because something, like there's some bacteria or like oil or, you know, whatever. They close it for like 2 days. Yeah, but you swam there all the other days.
Yeah. I saw the delay. I didn't see the aftermath of people actually getting sick.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because they swam in the sewer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not a good thing.
No, there was a quote from there. They did the triathletes first and then the marathon swimmers later. But one of the triathletes said, I saw and felt things under the bridge that you should never saw and feel.
Oh no.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Stay out of the pit. Fix the ball pit, the Museum of Ice Cream Sprinkle Pit. Feel good. All right. That's our show. We'll be back next week. Week zero is upon us. Holy crap.
Woo!
Go college football. Thanks for subscribing, listening to us, sharing on social media, telling your friends about us. Membership drive. We'll start the real membership drive next week. We need some of you guys to put in some work. We love you, though. We love you. Talk to you later.